Welcome to Stories After Midnight. Today we're going to be reading part 5 of Miracles Cast in Blood, written by Jarrett. Thank you to my patrons for helping make this episode possible. Let's get started. Charlie, the awful voice cooed through the phone. You really have some balls trying to double-cross the man who's got your boy is really, and I mean really stupid. Now he's gonna have to die. How did he know? How could he possibly know? No, please. You have to let me explain. It's not what you think, I swear, Charlie pleaded. I think you've done enough explaining. You blew it. No, wait, I'll do anything. Anything you ask. Just tell me. The pause was brief, but felt eternal. Anything? Yes. Write this down. I'll send someone out to meet you to make sure you don't screw this one up either. He rattled off a meeting point and told him to be there within the hour. Charlie blotted it down on a sticky note, ran to his car, and sped off. He hadn't a second to spare. As he began driving, he shot Jessica a simple text. He knows. You're blown. He waited for a response. Nothing. He clutched the steering wheel ever tighter. 20 minutes went by, getting closer to the meetup point and growing ever agitated at her lack of communication. He punched in her cell phone number and hit send. After calling the police and notifying them of Dennis's hideout, Jessica pulled up Tom Harrington's email address from the Sentinel's website. She opened her AOL account and attached all the information about Dennis's past into it. She realized she could get into a lot of trouble for doing this. Sending a citizen's private information to someone outside a criminal case wasn't just a no-no, it was a monumental breach of privacy. Then again, what did a man like Dennis Randall need privacy for? Jessica massaged her forehead as she hit send on the email. She had done it for a multitude of reasons. First, with the revelation of Judge Tyson's role in the web, she wasn't sure who of her colleagues she could trust. Second, Tom's daughter was a victim in this case. If he could bring all of this out into the open, he could bring down a lot of very important people. And that's when she'd go to work. One of the skills a district attorney needed to have was when to utilize the press to their advantage. Her thoughts diverged to Hal Tyson. What a scumbag, a lowlife, backstabbing snake. He had to be the one that told Dennis about the fake drug bust. Someone, most likely an ally of his, had overheard the plan and had relayed the information back to him, knowing his connection to Dennis. That was another thing that didn't make sense. How did Dennis manage to get this many high-profile people in his pocket? Why did? Without warning, the lights to the cabin died, plunging the room into suffocating darkness. Feeling her heart rate quicken, she pushed off the bar stool and glanced out to the rear of the property. The rustic square windows provided little to no visibility. The downpour outside made matters worse. No lightning flashed, no thunder, just the paradiddle of raindrops on the roof. Damn, she muttered. She wasn't about to go outside and check the fuse box, not in this weather. Chances were good the power was going to be knocked out for a while. She pondered going back to her car and driving back home, but she was supposed to be in a jail cell. If she was spotted, there was no telling what would happen to Joey Sanders. On the other hand, what did it matter? The only one who needed to be kept in the dark was standing under stadium floodlights, so there was no point in limiting her investigative role here. She had to leave. Snatching her puffer coat from the back of a chair, she shrugged into it, pajamas and all, grabbed her purse, and sped through the darkened hallway until she was in the front room, and froze. A figure stood outside, their outline indistinct through the rain-streaked glass windows. Jessica watched in terror as they slowly walked out of view to the side of the house. She swore she could hear the leaves crunch underfoot through the harsh pitter-patter of the storm. Her heart sank further as the two other dark shadows emerged from near the tree line. Panic enveloped her. She recognized one of those outlines, fat, portly with chunky arms and a waddling gait. It was then she realized her epiphany had been dead on. Hal Tyson had sold her out. She wanted to run out the front door into her car, but she was sure she'd be spotted, and worse yet, there was no way she could outrun three men. two of which she was sure were police officers. Tyson's allies, no doubt. She was sure they were armed. Her only option was hiding. With gut-spiking dread infusing her nervous system, she tiptoed to a side bedroom and shut the door. And suddenly a crash from the back of the cabin, glass shattering. They'd broken a window. In a panic, Jessica threw open the closet door and slid her meager frame into it, covering herself with the clothes she'd brought along. There wasn't much, certainly not enough to keep her hidden if one was to open the door, but it was better than waiting to get caught. The desperate twitch of an insect caught in a spider's web is a futile act. Its fate has long since been decided, yet still the bug fights until it succumbs. It is an apt comparison to draw on as Jessica Neal yanked out her cell phone and attempted to call 911. Yet, as the heavy boots slowly trounced down the hallway, Jessica knew with sickening certainty that no one was going to reach her in time. She pushed herself deeper into the closet, into the darkest recess, the most obscure corner. In a hysteria, she fumbled through her bag and retrieved a vial of pepper spray, pointing it towards the door. The bedroom door creaked as it was gently swung open, the sound sending a terrifying quail through her bowels. She sat on the floor, knees to chin, arms outstretched, with the spray as the footsteps stopped. The wooden floor groaned as the intruder knelt. Fabric swished as the bed skirt was drawn up, the clicking of a flashlight. White light peeking in through the slit of the closet door. Then, like an alarm going off in the middle of the night, Jessica's cell phone screen lit up and her ringtone began to blare at full blast. Panicking, she accidentally dropped the pepper spray on the floor as she silenced the call. She didn't see who the caller was, but the sound was enough. The footsteps shuffled over. The closet door was slid open violently, the frame slamming against the opposite wall. Jessica Neal screamed as a huge man dressed in all black wrenched her out of the closet. "Go on," the bearded therapist in the passenger seat said as he snapped Charlie's cell phone in half and discarded the plastic out the window. "Let's get this done." Charlie quavered in the driver's seat, his all-black getup making him sweaty and uncomfortable. He looked out the driver's side window to the darkened exterior of the Harrington household. No lights on inside, and no porch lights on outside. Damn, he wished she would have answered his call. Where was she? He couldn't go through with this. "What are you waiting for?" Lloyd nudged Charlie again, the moonlight gleaming off the polished black steel of the pistol resting in his lap. The sight made Charlie's mouth run dry. After slipping on a pair of latex gloves and a balaclava, Charlie opened the SUV's door and stepped out onto the street. Shut it behind him and strolled across nonchalantly. Charlie gingerly stepped onto the front porch and crouched down near one of the front windows alongside the door. He'd been a troublemaker most of his adolescent life, spending more time inside a juvenile jail cell than at home. In those days, Charlie hadn't cared much about tact or stealth. He'd only wanted the goods inside. Burglarizing a house was no easy thing, and could turn ugly real quick if done with reckless abandon. Breaking a window was out of the question, but luckily he wouldn't have to. Lloyd had handed Charlie a house key which Dennis had snatched off Lizzie when he'd abducted her. The only hiccup would be if Tom or Marjorie had changed out their locks, which would be the smart thing to do after their daughter getting kidnapped. But first he had to check for an alarm system. That was really important, because if they had a motion detector nestled in the corner of the ceiling, he'd be toast before he stepped through the door. So he fished a flashlight out of his coat pocket, a heavy-duty police model, and twisted the handle. White light fired out from the end as Charlie inspected the front windows. Odds were good that if they had window alarms, they had motion detectors as well. Alarm systems installed during the house's construction could be easily hidden, but this house was old, a mid-century two-level suburban Cape Cod. He flashed the beam onto the windowsill, the drawn curtains would obscure some of the light, and checked for any magnetic contact switches. Finding none, he crawled over to the other window and checked again. Nothing. Good. He flashed a light inside the window and peered through the glass and into the living room. Scanned up the wall and checked the top corner for a motion sensor, and also nothing. He rose to his feet and stepped in front of the door. He looked down and saw a welcome footmat. Sadness shot through his heart. These weren't bad people. Didn't deserve any of this. And God, he was a cop. Supposed to protect people, not cause them harm. What kind of man breaks into a house to abduct an 18-year-old girl? One who's already been abducted once before? But if someone made him decide between his child and someone else's, he would choose Joey every time. He wasn't the best father. Hell, he wasn't even a good one. But he'd be damned if he sat on his hands and allowed his only son to get tortured by some sick bastard. His wife was long gone, swallowed up by breast cancer 10 years ago at 32. He had nothing except for Joey. Never bothered to remarry, had never even so much as dated, which is why he had to do this. He'd never forgive himself if he didn't do everything possible to keep Joey safe. Steeling himself, he slid the key into the lock and twisted. The door popped open. He stepped inside. The office was deserted this time of night, but Tom couldn't sleep. Not with the bombshell email the assistant DA had just dropped in his lap. He'd been combing the gold mine, and by the time he'd seen the extent of it, he felt like a trip to the bathroom was in order. Hunched over a toilet bowl, to barf his guts out. The man who'd kidnapped his daughter, his beautiful, sweet Lizzie, was a bona fide demon, had no right to be called a human. God shouldn't have allowed him to be born. But this email confirmed his earlier suspicions. Jessica's arrest was a fake-out. She'd said as much in the body text, because according to her, she was attempting to save a police officer's son who'd been abducted. First Lizzie, now this boy. When did the torment end? Hadn't the community bared enough strife over the years? But this realization hadn't surprised him. Not really. In fact, he would have been surprised if she was a drug addict. Too sharp of a mind to be doing that. No, what had surprised him was all the information and photos she'd given. No doubt a lot of it was confidential, made to be kept under wraps to the public. Yet none of this compared to the most important piece of info, the address of Dennis Randall's hideout. Tom Harrington had made a vow to his wife after the trial, a promise that he would kill the man who had so brutally violated his daughter and ruined his life. He turned off the computer, flicked off the light, grabbed his raincoat, and headed out of the office. As he did, he waved to the night security guard, but he was too engrossed in the primetime football game to notice. Tom reached his car, his clothing thoroughly soaked, and shivered as the heat kicked in. His hands reached over and sprung open the glove compartment. They nestled the shiny revolver as he examined the shiny black steel. It was one of the two weapons Tom owned. Before the ordeal with Lizzie, he would have found the idea of owning a gun preposterous. But now, with his family under constant attack from all sides, he needed protection. Marjorie and Lizzie needed to be safe, and Tom would see to it that they were never bothered again. Tom put the car in drive and sped down the slick, glistening street. Dennis Randall would get what was coming to him. Charlie gingerly ascended the stairs, each carpeted step weighing his boots down with lead. He didn't want to do this. Wasn't sure he had the guts, but he'd been boxed in. Clenching his jaw, he reached the second floor and rounded the corner. To his right, he saw a door propped open. Loud, slobbery snoring and the bright glow of a television filtered through. He chanced to peek and saw Marjorie Harrington fast asleep, the covers messy and jumbled. Her silk nightgown bobbed up and down with her deep, rhythmic breathing. The QVC salesperson on the TV was selling some newfangled grill, but his voice jumped a few octaves, causing Marjorie to stir. For a fleeting moment, Charlie was sure the woman was going to awaken, but she tossed and turned, further crumpling her bedding before settling back down in a new position. He let out a breath he hadn't realized he'd been holding. Continuing down the dark hall at a snail's pace, he poked his head into a door on his left and saw his target. Lizzie Harrington lay flat on her stomach in the far right corner of the room, her sheets just as messy as her mother's. Pushing the door open, the unoiled hinges cried out. Charlie froze in the doorway as the girl adjusted her position. Again, he was sure she'd been yanked from slumber, but no, she didn't stir afterwards. Swallowing the lump in his throat, he walked across the carpeted bedroom, did it in less than 5 steps, and stood over the young girl as she slept. With a tremulous grip, he fished out the stun gun James had given him in the SUV only minutes before. His entire body rocked as he slowly straightened his arm out towards Lizzie. He lowered the taser, pointing the 2 electric prods at her neck. His hand levitated there, unable to take the final plunge downwards. Suddenly the girl stirred, as if sensing his presence above her. Some primal, animalistic part of her brain registered that she was not alone, and her eyes shot open, wide and scanning. The pupils widened to their tensile limits as they rested on Charlie. Her mouth contorted into a look of abject terror. Before she had a chance to scream, he jabbed the stun gun into the smooth flesh of her neck and pressed the button. A blue bolt shot out from the two prods and onto Lizzie's body. The shock jolted her and the gun made a loud zap sound. Choking gasps rang from her as drool flowed from her open mouth. Her body twitched and spasmed on the bed as the smell of urine invaded his nostrils. Another zap. Finally, she fell into unconsciousness, her nose leaking blood, blotting her white floral pillowcase. He picked up the limp form, threw her over his shoulder, and headed out of the bedroom. He was just to the staircase landing when he felt her body tense and stiffen, then flounder like a fish out of water. In a flash of movement, he lost grip of her body and she went tumbling onto the floor head first. The thud reverberated throughout the entire house. Charlie bent to pick her up, but she began convulsing, banging her heels into the carpet and her elbows and knees into either side of the hallway wall. A seizure. "Lizzie?" Charlie heard a woman's voice call from the bedroom. Sheets rustled and the floor creaked as footsteps sounded, hurried and full of apprehension. He froze. What was he going to do? He couldn't just stand here, and he couldn't hide either, because when she inevitably came to, she'd tell her mother all about the man who'd shocked her. No, had to take a more direct approach. He stepped over Lizzie's thrashing form and caught Marjorie just as she was clearing the doorway. A loud gasp escaped her lips as Charlie raised the stun gun and jabbed it into her throat. The same blue bolt erupted from the prods, and she collapsed to the floor. Her eyes remained open as they stared up at Charlie. Her lips attempted to speak, but no words broke through. "I'm sorry," he said, sorrow drowning his vocal cords. "Please forgive me." Then he bent over and tased her again. Marjorie tried to move her limbs, but failed. A tear leaked from her eyelid as she tried to breathe, but even that felt impossible. Her vision was blurry and her mind raced. Again it was happening. Again. Lizzie needed protecting and she'd failed her. No, Marjorie couldn't let those evil men take her again. She had to stop it. Mustering up every ounce of will, she crawled over to the nightstand, reached up, yanked on the doorknob, and pulled. Instead of opening the drawer as intended, the entire cabinet tilted on its axis and crashed onto the bedroom floor. Picture frames bounced, a glass of water spilled like a tidal wave over her. Didn't matter, she had found what she wanted. A revolver. Tom had bought two of them after Lizzie's first abduction, and they both promised each other that they would never let it happen again. Her fingers grasped the leather holster and pulled on the gun's wooden handle. The short, snub-nosed revolver glistened from the light beaming off the television. She heard Lizzie convulsing out in the hall and heard that man's heavy breathing as he tried to pick her up. Another thump. He must have dropped her. Tapping into some superhuman strength she hadn't known existed, Marjorie crawled on her hands and pushed with her feet as she moved over the nightstand and broke past the threshold of the doorway. Looked out, saw that man in all black hunched over Lizzie. Her arms shaking, she steadied herself using the door, aimed the gun, and screamed, "Stay away from her!" With that, she fired. The hammer snapped down and a bright yellow flash erupted from the muzzle. The shot sounded like a cannon in the enclosed space. The man looked up, just in time to catch a bullet. A dark spray of red exploded from center mass as he careened backwards down the stairs. She heard him howl as he tumbled. She wasn't done yet. Body weak, she rose to a kneeling position and peered over the staircase railing, seeing a dark outline sprawled on the floor. Without saying another word, she posted her arms on the railing for support, aimed the gun again, and emptied the five remaining rounds into the man's back. And that's the end of this part. Thought I'd leave it on a little bit of a cliffhanger for you. Hopefully that was satisfactory. Please don't dislike this video and or episode. I hope you enjoyed it, though. I hope you'll stick around for the next one. Hey, if you like this video and you like the series that's going on, consider subscribing on YouTube, following the podcast for more. I really appreciate that. And if you'd like to come hang out with us, join us on Discord. It's a pretty fun place. And lastly, but not leastly, if you'd like to support this channel even more than just interacting with it, go to Patreon and join the other group of patrons there. I really appreciate you. Thank you for listening. We'll see you in the next one.